Principe, West Africa, 1919. A young, bespectacled man is supervising a small team that's hauling several crates up the side of a mountain.
Gently now. Very carefully.
The crates are marked Royal Astronomical Society.
Careful with the telescope.
Dyson! What are you doing? We need some help here!
Right. Right, men, come on. Put your backs into it.
Heavy rain over an encampment.
It's bad news, I'm afraid. The photographic plates, they've been damaged. It's the heat, they weren't stored properly.
All of them?
There are only 8 which will work.
Then we have 8 photographs.
We won't have any at all if this weather doesn't lift by tomorrow.
The bespectacled man, Arthur Eddington, looks out at the rain.
If the cloud breaks, 2:15 tomorrow. We look up into the heavens, take photographs of the eclipse. We will be scientists at our work. We'll be looking at the poetry of existence. And if Einstein's right, the universe will never look the same again.
Well, it had better stop raining then, hadn't it?
Einstein and Eddington. 5 years earlier.
Got it! Leave it!
Match points!
This is it. 3 years we've been playing this pair. We've never won. Seize the moment, Eddington.
Cambridge, 1914. A young woman, Winifred, watches from a bench near the sidelines as the game of tennis doubles resumes. The ball strikes the baseline near Arthur's feet.
Out!
We've won!
We've won!
Well played.
Well played,
well played.
Well played. William, I think it was in.
What?
I think the ball was in.
Well, the sun was in your eyes. You couldn't possibly see.
You've taken 5 years of defeat with impeccable politeness, Eddington. Accept this victory with the same good grace.
No, the ball was in!
Let him have his moment.
He's off to fight. Don't spoil this.
Arthur glances over at William.
He didn't tell me.
As he passes by Arthur, William claps a hand on his shoulder. Looking unsettled, Arthur stares at Winifred.
I don't consider it a victory.
I think you've made that very clear.
Arthur and Winifred are carrying boxes of books from a removals van into a large house.
Sorry, I'm being...
What, pig-headed?
Yes.
And stubborn.
Unpacking the books, he doesn't respond.
You're very fond of William, aren't you? I could see at the tennis. You should tell him.
He looks at her. They both walk through to a large room where a bearded man stands watching an orrery, a rotating model of the solar system.
Some of the committee had doubts about appointing you on account of your youth.
Sir Oliver.
You must be the sister. You know what I said? I said there have been 9 directors of the Cambridge Observatory since Isaac Newton was here. Each of them has slept where you'll sleep, eaten where you'll eat. And each of them was as damned sure about Newton as the man before.
Tea would be nice. And cake.
Winnie?
I told them, you listen to me. What is there to do after Newton? We have the truth. We know how the universe works. So we need a director who can measure and describe what we know to be true. We need Arthur Stanley Eddington. Bugger theory.
Give me the best measuring man in England.
Winifred spoons some jam onto a scone and hands the plate to Sir Oliver.
The jam's homemade.
Excellent.
Mm. I'll leave you men to talk, shall I?
Winifred goes.
Perhaps there'll be a Mrs. Eddington soon. There's a minimum height of 5'7".
For astronomers' wives?
My son Raymond is 5'6". You know what they did? The recruiting officer measured him in his shoes.
Oh, I see, the army. Which?
Cambridgeshire's. We're damn proud of the boy. I know you're a Quaker. You won't fight. I have no quarrel with that. But you're worried. Because you're an Englishman, you feel your patriotism is in conflict with your faith. I can help. The University of Berlin is gathering together the best German scientists. The reason's obvious. German science is putting itself at the right hand of German military ambition.
I see.
There's one man they want very badly. We don't know why. We don't see the point of him.
What does this have to do with me?
I want you to look at this man's work and give a lecture. We need English science to remind everyone just how strong we are.
Newton's truth is a great strength to us all.
Good man.
What's his name?
Albert Einstein.
A small sailing boat moves across a lake. Albert Einstein, a black-haired man with a moustache, lies smiling next to a boy on the floor of the hull. Albert's steering the tiller with an upstretched hand, whilst his other hand raises a finger aloft. Zurich, Switzerland.
What are we doing?
I am steering the boat.
Is Albert looking?
Albert licks his finger.
The wind direction? The tiller?
Yes.
Close your eyes.
The boy closes his eyes and Albert adjusts the rudder. The boat changes direction whilst Albert continues to smile, his finger still raised in the air. The bow of the boat strikes a jetty where another boy and some people are standing.
Hans, Edward, all of you, listen to me! What do you see? A man on a boat, on a lake, with his sons. The man is taking off his socks. He rolls them into a ball. Ready, Hans? And he hurls the socks at the people on the bank. What is the speed of the socks? The speed of the boat added to the speed of the socks. But what about light?
What about light?
What if I shine a beam of light at you on the bank from my boat? What is the speed of the light?
He hops into the water.
The speed of the boat added to the speed of the light?
Yes.
No.
Why not?
Why not? Come on, boys. Better get home.
Now, Maleva, a dark-haired, middle-aged woman, is carefully setting a table. Albert carries his shoes and jacket and has his trousers rolled up as he runs along a country path with his two sons. Maleva sits waiting at the dining table. The sitting room door of the well-furnished apartment bursts open and Albert and the children rush in. Albert removes his wet trousers and looks over to see Maleva's disapproving gaze.
Sorry!
You went to the lake!
A well-dressed, stern-faced man steps down from a train carriage.
Board, ladies and gentlemen!
Carrying a cane, the man walks through busy city streets. He stops to consult a map. Albert's boys, Hans and Edward, playfully wrestle with each other as Albert sits at the table smoking a cigar. Maleva's clearing the dinner plates.
Why were you in the lake?
in the interests of science.
Were there any women impressed by your performance? There usually are.
I was talking to the children.
You talk to the boys about your work, but not to me?
Any pudding?
The well-dressed man arrives outside the apartment building just as Maleva's preparing to leave it.
Where are you going?
I'm leaving.
You can't leave, I'm working.
No!
She departs in a lift and Albert runs down some stairs.
Maleva, please! Maleva! Please!
Well, it was soon as you said to me we would all share our work, our businesses together, your life!
What I'm doing now, I can't talk about it. I don't have the energy or the time to share it with anyone.
What is it? What is your work?
Gravity.
Max! Max Planck!
Hello, Albert.
You don't remember me, do you? You don't even remember my name.
Oh, Maleva! That's fine. She's always leaving.
The two men walk together.
So, 9 years work on gravity and all you have are questions. Beautiful questions, of course, but no answers. Perhaps conditions are not right here in Zurich. I think you need some help.
I don't need anything.
No. If you are content to remain in obscurity at a second-rate university...
Why are you here, Max? Right.
We could offer you a great deal of money.
You didn't answer my question.
12,000 marks. A professorship. And membership of the Prussian Academy of Sciences. If you join us in Berlin. Oh, come back to Germany, Albert.
Who's us?
The university.
So you're offering me money? Status?
Yes.
Prestige?
Yes.
The answer is no. I have a family, Max. I can't just uproot them.
No, you can't. I agree with you. To be a great scientist, there are always sacrifices that have to be made. Finish your work on gravity, and I think you can be great. Train ticket to Berlin. In case you change your mind.
Albert stares at Mac for a moment before taking the envelope he's being offered. Max walks on, and Albert lingers on the pavement behind him, smoking his cigar with a contemplative look on his face. Arthur to Winifred.
Everything in the universe is ordered. Everything is bound together by one force. Gravity. Everything happens for a reason. Isn't that wonderful? Newton described how gravity acts and explained why. And he was right, but he was worried because you can't touch gravity. You can't see it. And Newton struggled with this. He worried and he doubted. And then he found his answer. What fills the unexplained? God, Winnie. God's will. Newton described everything perfectly. But he left room for God, too.
Winifred watches with a smile of wonder as the miniature worlds of the orrery spin round, following their orbital paths. Now, Albert's bidding farewell to his family on a train platform.
I love you.
I love you.
Don't forget to visit your aunt and uncle.
I'm going to work.
I know, I know.
Well, I'll send for you all as soon as I can.
Hans, the older boy, is looking particularly unhappy.
Look at me. Hans.
Hans refuses to meet his father's eye, even as Albert climbs aboard the train and it begins to pull away from the platform.
Hans!
Arthur walks across the grounds of Cambridge. He removes his hat as he enters a large library and approaches the librarian.
Einstein, Albert, anything we've got.
Berlin. Albert is smartly dressed as he arrives in the city. The librarian climbs down a spiral staircase carrying a slim German volume which he hands to Arthur. He glances at the date beneath the name of the book's author, Albert Einstein.
This is 9 years old.
It's all there is.
Carrying his suitcase, Albert runs alongside a motor car on a busy street. He seems impressed with the city and slows to a brisk walking pace, taking in the sights and sounds. Clutching the book, Arthur leaves the library and strides off towards the tennis courts. Albert surveys his new rooms. Then he's meeting Max near an impressive university building.
Max!
Max raises his cane.
You're here! Welcome to the greatest university in Europe.
Good evening.
They walk along the university corridors.
Ah! Fritz Haber, you know, of course.
Fritz Haber. Einstein. You you look a little, less Jewish than the last time I saw you.
Well, I'm a Christian now in a Christian country. I have renounced my Jewish faith.
So what are you working on?
I'm looking at gas.
Ah, which?
Ammonia.
What about it?
It's conversion into nitrate.
Explosives?
What use is science if it has no practical application?
We should go. We're late.
Oh, for what?
There's someone I want you to meet.
Albert shakes hands with Fritz, and he and Max walk on. A plush restaurant where a five-piece orchestra are entertaining a group of diners, many of whom wear military uniform. A waiter takes the coat off an immaculately dressed man. Albert and Max are walking through the nighttime streets.
Who is this someone?
He who makes it all possible.
I'm at 12,000 marks a year.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to have a good look at his investment. Max, I thought it was part of my contract that I would have total freedom.
Just keep what you say clear and simple.
They join Mr. Copel at his table.
You're late.
Well, I was invited at precisely the time I was supposed to arrive here, therefore it was impossible for me to be here when I left.
What?
The energy which an object has because of its motion will increase its mass. The increase in mass makes it harder for the object to increase its speed. Try as he might, the brilliant scientist setting out to meet the fat industrialist was always going to be late. If the sun were to disappear now, according to Isaac Newton and his laws of gravity, we feel it now, instantaneously. The force of gravity moves faster than the speed of light. How can that be?
This is what I'm paying for?
What do you say? What is he saying? Thank you very much for all the money you're giving me.
Albert smiles at Copel, who looks completely nonplussed.
Goodbye.
Max watches Albert walking from the restaurant. He turns to look at Copel, who still looks none the wiser.
This is the Einstein you speak so highly of?
Yes.
What does he offer us?
He has a truly original probing mind.
Questions don't win wars.
You have plenty of scientists who can help you practically. He is a theorist.
What good is theory to me?
After two centuries, he might just prove Isaac Newton, the greatest ever English scientist, the man who set down the laws that describe the workings of the whole universe, wrong. That's what he can give us.
On a narrow country road, Arthur and William are racing each other on bikes.
Slow down! Wait! fast!
They leave their bikes against the trunk of a tree.
So, 2,199 miles in 1912. 2,304 last year. We have done exactly 1,500 in the first 9 months of this year. So, if we keep going at the current rate and building in a variant for poor weather, shorter daylight hours and possible illness, then we should have filled in the whole map by mid-afternoon of December the 25th.
Otherwise known as Christmas Day.
Well, Quakers don't celebrate Christmas, so
I should be back by then. Over by Christmas is what everyone says.
William.
There's something I want to say. When do you go?
7 days training, then France. That wasn't what you wanted to say, was it?
No.
I know what it is.
Do you?
Your religion is against what I'm doing. Which is why I was afraid to talk to you about it. I'm truly sorry, forgive me.
Arthur nods, then shakes his head.
Here.
A pocket watch.
A token of our friendship.
Arthur takes the watch, then looks at William, who turns away to retrieve his bicycle. He picks it up and pushes it away from the tree. Above, ominous rain clouds drift across the sky. Albert is dining with his aunt, uncle, and a young woman, their daughter Elsa.
We were saying it's been years.
10.
A nephew out of the ether.
Hasn't my Elsa grown? She was still a child when you left Germany.
Why did you leave?
I have no attachment to any country or place.
We all belong to the country we're born in.
I renounced my German nationality. I was German, now I'm Swiss. What difference does it make? And there's no such thing as the ether. If it existed, light would be slowed down by it, and it isn't. Light always travels at the same speed. There's no such thing as the ether.
What else is there? Nothing?
Elsa pipes up.
Freedom.
Imagination.
I think your imagination is a little overexcited.
Not excited enough. I intend to excite it a great deal more.
Elsa smiles under Albert's gaze. Arthur's sitting at a desk, studying Einstein's book by the light of a table lamp. Winifred appears at the door, just as he turns over a page. He's perfectly oblivious of her, and she steps away. Now it's broad daylight, and Arthur's still at his desk, engrossed in the book and the notes he's made of some of the equations in it. Winifred comes in with a breakfast tray.
Shall I take the top off the egg? Arthur? There you are.
There's something in this.
Well, that's good, isn't it?
I don't know if it is or not.
I'm delighted English science is taking such an enlightened approach towards Germany.
A pair of feminine hands move across a piano keyboard. Albert's climbing a staircase when he stops, suddenly captivated by the music he's hearing. It's Elsa who's singing as she plays the piano. She notices Albert standing behind her.
How did you get in?
You left the door open. I brought you some things.
A basket of food and wine.
Thank you. I love Schubert.
Do you?
Yes.
Good. Who else? Beethoven?
Oh, too personal. He makes me feel...
Yes?
Nothing.
What does he make you feel?
Naked.
She smiles bashfully.
Music and physics are nourished by the same sort of longing.
I don't know anything about physics.
Good. Good. What I mean to say is that it will have to be the music between us.
She gazes at him nervously, and Albert gives her a smile. Arthur's scribbling down mathematical equations when Winifred comes into the room. Seeing her, he picks up the pocket watch which lies open on the desk.
It's only noon. Your lecture's not until 2.
I know.
Where are you going?
My friend William. His train is leaving.
When?
Now. You were right about friends. How one must say things.
Soon, Arthur's on his bike, racing down an alleyway.
When do you arrive?
Not so fast!
He pedals quickly along a country road. On a station platform, William's amongst the soldiers preparing to board a train. Arthur leaves his bike behind and rushes into the crowded station. He looks around, then dashes down some steps in order to cross to another platform.
Can I have a light, sir?
Sir Oliver.
Eddington. Come to see the regiment off?
Yes.
This is my son, Raymond.
Hello.
Lady Shirley, you know.
Yes.
It's a proud day to be English. And to be in England.
Yes, good luck.
Won't need luck. On you go, my boy. Go on, Raymond. I'll go out the door. On you go.
Arthur moves on down the platform, straining to see William. The train slowly pulls away and people begin waving to the soldiers, some of whom lean from the windows in the carriage doors. Black smoke streams from the locomotive's funnel as it picks up speed, travelling through the open countryside. Arthur's on his bike, pedalling furiously, trying to keep up. He catches sight of William sitting by a window, but the train's going too fast, and Arthur's forced to watch it disappearing into the distance. A large and elegant hall. Arthur addresses Sir Oliver and several other men gathered around a table.
I wasn't given much time to prepare this. We have, I think, most of us been the victims of Sir Oliver's requests. Albert Einstein has no regard for the conventions of scientific presentation. Even his mathematical symbols are all of his own making. To be frank, it might as well be a foreign language. But I decoded some of it. He's suggesting that time is at different speeds in the universe depending on how fast you are moving. The faster you move, the more time slows down.
Time isn't the same everywhere.
That's what he says. Yes, time isn't shared. It's not an absolute.
What are his references?
None, but...
Acknowledgements?
None.
Does he propose how any of this might be tested?
No, but that's not the point.
What is the point of theory if it can't be tested?
What does he say about gravity?
Nothing.
What holds everything together? What dictates the motion of the planets? What controls the life of the universe as a whole?
Gravity.
Newton's laws. Our map for everything. So this Einstein, in other words, has nothing to say about the real world. Eddington.
That's right, no. It's not real.
As Arthur leaves the building, one of the men follows him out.
Left them happy? Was that your intention?
Arthur struggles to free his bicycle from the railing he's left it by before pedaling off. Up ahead, a man is painting the word Huns on a shop window. Seeing the violent altercation inside, Arthur rushes into the shop.
Stop this!
He gets punched in the face.
Leave these people alone!
The troublemakers, four men, take off hastily down the street. Arthur helps a teenage girl to her feet, and she weeps into his shoulder. Later, Arthur ushers three people up the steps of his home.
Winnie, these are the Mullers. They're a German family who need our help.
Winifred welcomes the Mullers into the house. Later, she's looking at Arthur's bloodied nose.
Let me clean you up. It was horrible. But it's over.
No, it's not that.
He looks thoughtful.
One of them asked a question I didn't answer.
Who?
At the lecture. He does say something about gravity.
Einstein.
He doesn't mention it, but if you look properly, it's obvious. He poses a question.
Turn this way a little.
Newton says that gravity is instantaneous, but Einstein says that the speed of light is the speed limit of the universe, so gravity can't be instantaneous. They can't both be right. Einstein or Newton, that's the question he's asking.
Well then, the truth is all that matters. And he must go after it.
Albert's family are climbing the stairs to his apartment. Albert himself is asleep in a chair as Maleva, Hans and Edward enter the room, giggling with amusement. Maleva rushes to remove a pan with eggs but no water in it from a hot stove. She fills it with water and smiles at Albert as he wakes.
Our supper?
I thought you were arriving tomorrow.
Hans wants to know. Go on, ask your father.
Is your work nearly finished?
Albert smiles at Hans and gets up. He guides both boys out of the apartment.
Let me show you what I've been working on.
While the boys wait by the banister of the circular stairwell, Albert collects the four eggs from the pan in the kitchen. Maleva watches as he returns to the boys and drops the eggs over the banister.
What is it made of? Where does it come from? What is it? That's what I'm struggling with, Hans. I can't make sense of it.
Maleva's poring over Albert's notes when she's startled to see him looking at her.
You've changed the way that you do everything. The symbols you're using are strange and complicated. You've moved a long way away from me.
Later, while Maleva reads to the children, Albert sits at the piano, playing the keyboard with a melancholy air about him. A young woman is hurrying up the stairs outside. It's Elsa. As she sings, Maleva turns her head towards the door, and Albert's expression freezes.
I bought the Schubert to play.
Elsa sees Maleva and the children. Realization dawns on her face, and she glances at Albert. Later, Maleva throws some sheet music onto the piano.
Play the music.
No.
Why not? You love Schubert.
No.
I came to Berlin because I thought that there might be a future for us. I see now that I was wrong. Do you want a divorce?
Albert stares back at his wife, unblinking. Now Albert's shouting from a window at Maleva and the children as they walk away down the street.
Hans! When my work is finished, I will come and tell you what it means! I promise you!
Arthur sits next to Winifred as she speaks at a small Quaker gathering attended by the Mullers.
We withdraw into the presence of God. We are still. We are silent. We listen so that God may be heard.
Who are we? If we are anything, we Quakers are men and women of principle. We will never believe that any man, woman, or child is unwelcome in our beloved England because they were born in another country. This is your home.
The Muller's teenage daughter smiles at Arthur, and he smiles back. Outside, Arthur's handed a white feather by one of the angry protesters.
Coward. No, it's not like that.
My boy's gone. What makes you so different? Why is it so easy for you to say no? Stinking cowards.
The man spits in Arthur's face, then glares at him defiantly. Shocked, Arthur wipes his face with a handkerchief. Then leads Winifred and the Mullers away.
You should be ashamed of yourselves!
In Berlin, Albert seems morose as he walks the streets, his mind clearly elsewhere. A university lecture theatre. A technician carries a cage full of pigeons and inserts it into a hatch on the side of a large glass chamber. The chamber's been placed in full view of the handful of people present. Koppel, Fritz and Max are there as they watch as the cage bottom is slid from beneath the pigeons, sending them into the chamber. From the hatch opening being sealed to Albert striding purposefully towards the university building. In the lecture theatre, the technician turns a valve which releases a thick, smoky gas into the chamber. Panicking, the pigeons all try to take flight, beating their wings against the glass walls. Koppel.
I have it from the highest authority. A huge offensive will follow the first use of the gas.
Then the war will be shorter.
Oh, yeah.
German lives will be saved.
Yes.
Albert enters the theatre and looks with horror at the pigeons, all of which now lie dead at the bottom of the chamber.
What are you doing?
He hangs his head, then turns to face the men standing in the viewing galleries. Incredulous, he smiles at them.
What is this?
After a moment, Max walks down some steps to join him. The two men walk from the lecture theatre together. Later, they sit smoking cigars in the restaurant.
My son, for years, has been doing nothing. Now in the army, he's found a purpose. He's transformed. It's a good feeling to be able to call oneself German again.
Did you know he was going to be here?
Koppel has entered, and he confidently strides over to join Max and Albert.
Your membership of the Academy of Sciences has a consequence. You have become an official of the state, which makes your nationality German.
I gave it up.
The Kaiser himself has personally decreed your return to German citizenship.
Then the Kaiser himself should have thought to ask me first.
Show him.
This is a list of the greatest names in German cultural life. The inheritors of Beethoven, Schubert, Goethe.
Yes, but what is it?
A manifesto to be sent all over the world, even to England. A statement of solidarity with the German army. Signed by just 93 of the highest names. It will be your honor to be the 94th signatory.
Albert looks from Koppel to Max.
Is Goethe going to fight Shakespeare? We could have a Swiss jury and decide the outcome without any more bloodshed. I won't sign.
You are an expensive addition to the university.
Are you threatening me?
He's reminding you of your love of God. And your duty to your country.
What do you give him, Max?
I work on artillery trajectories.
I have a contract. And my part of it is the work that I do. I do not belong to anyone. You cannot have my name.
Arthur's standing in front of the orrery, watching as the representation of Earth revolves continually around the device's central sphere, depicting the sun. He holds his hand up and briefly stops the Earth as it passes. Now he's entering the library.
The Einstein paper.
I've been told it's unavailable until further notice.
You've been told? What does that mean?
All German scientific journals have been taken out of circulation.
Sir Oliver's on the other side of the room, and he looks up from a book he's reading as Arthur slowly walks away from the librarian. Suddenly changing direction, Arthur walks through a door and gets into a lift, taking it down to a floor below the library's main level. He searches along shelves heavily laden with books. Locating the Einstein volume, he quickly leafs through it. He then looks up to see the librarian staring at him. Back in the library...
Eddington, are you all right?
I was looking for something.
What?
The Einstein paper.
Why? You made clear your views. Very good job you did.
Whatever you might think about German military ambition... It has nothing to do with German science.
Really? Manifesto to the civilized world. The German people are one. 93 signatures. Look. Max Planck, scientist. Wilhelm Röntgen, scientist. Fritz Haber, scientist. I think this makes it clear that we cannot distinguish between the barbaric German military and German scientists, wouldn't you say, old chap?
Sir Oliver begins to walk away.
He's not there. Einstein's not on the list.
But it just so happens that at this moment in history, he has moved himself to Berlin. I think that shows us where his allegiances lie. consorting with the enemy is a treasonable offence, Eddington.
A distracted-looking Arthur walks past his sister and the Mullers.
Arthur!
He returns to the sitting room.
Come with me.
He guides the Muller's daughter through to the room where the orrery is kept, and the others follow.
Agnes, the son.
Dishonor,
yes.
He switches the device on, and the planets begin to revolve.
Uranus.
Neptune.
Saturn. So the planets make their orbits around the sun. We can measure their orbits very, very precisely. Newton's theory of gravity tells us where they will be when they pass closest to the sun. He's always right, but...
He stops the device.
With Mercury, he's out. No one likes to admit it, but the reality is a tiny fraction different from that which Newton predicts it should be.
But by how much?
The length of a fingertip in millions of miles, but still out. Agnes, Mercury?
Merkur.
What are you doing?
I'm going to write to Albert Einstein. Every theory must make predictions about the real world. I want to ask Einstein what his theory predicts for Mercury.
Albert is with Elsa.
Hand up!
Technically good, but essentially shallow.
Wagner?
Indescribably offensive. I feel only a deep disgust for Wagner.
Mozart.
In Mozart, I see a reflection of the inner beauty of the universe.
He kisses her and she responds. Later, they walk hand in hand down a university corridor.
You've been talking about music.
Yes.
All day.
When I should have been working.
Is it because you are stuck?
You said you knew nothing about physics. Let's keep it that way.
They kiss before entering a common room, where Albert's colleagues seem shocked at Elsa's presence. At the large central table, Albert goes through his mail and pockets one of the letters. Fritz approaches him.
This is the senior common room. She's a woman.
Do you know, Harbour, I think you could be right. Quick, what shall we do? God knows. Anything might happen.
Fritz shakes his head slightly as Albert leads Elsa away. Outside, they both give in to laughter. Sneaking into the deserted lecture theatre, Albert and Elsa begin to kiss hungrily, tearing at each other's clothes. Albert lifts her onto a desk and she wraps her arms around him as they give in to their passion. Now, Albert stares at her intensely as he forks some food into his mouth.
You should eat more. You're too thin.
He opens the letter.
This is like the potato salad my mother made me when I was a child. Only...
What?
Not as good.
I brought you a present.
As Albert reads the complicated mathematical equations the letter contains, Elsa fetches a hairbrush from her handbag.
Albert?
He seems utterly absorbed by the letter, and she touches his hair briefly as she waits for him to finish reading it.
This Englishman has asked me a question. One tiny part of the universe is behaving badly.
The orbit of Mercury is outside the law. Why? If I could make my thinking on gravity fit with Mercury's bad behavior, then it would take me a long way. Towards...
Towards what?
The first step towards a new way of thinking. A whole new way.
Are you unstuck?
I have a lot of work to do.
She thinks for a moment.
Are you asking me to go?
At the university.
Have you seen Plank? Max! Max!
Albert's joyous mood quickly fades when he sees the despair on Max's face.
My son.
He grasps Max's shoulders.
I am more sorry than I can say.
Max's eyes are filled with tears as he drops his head down. Later, sitting opposite Albert in the empty restaurant, he knocks a drink back.
You miss your boys. But you will see them again.
Albert studies Max's face.
No, Max. I love science twice as much in times such as these. It takes one away from all the confusions and stupidities and horrors. And their emotional consequences.
You've been very kind. Now I must go home.
No.
No?
No. I need your help.
With what?
Mercury and mathematics.
Max and Albert are both lying on a carpeted floor, scribbling calculations, surrounded by notes.
If we get this result, where will we publish?
If. What's the matter with you? If we get the result.
Max studies Albert for a moment.
May I ask you a very serious question? What if God were to say you were mistaken? If he said, stop, Newton is right.
Then I would thank God for his point of view, and we would agree to differ, and I would be left feeling very sorry for God.
So you do believe in God?
I cannot conceive of a God who has a will of the kind we experience in ourselves.
And life after death?
Neither can I conceive of an individual who survives his own physical death.
Max watches Albert finishing his calculations. Finally, Albert looks up at Max.
There's our answer for Mercury's orbit.
And perhaps the first step to disproving Newton.
Max sees the name Albert's writing down.
Eddington, England.
Albert nods. Next, Arthur returns home and is handed a letter by Winifred. He instantly begins to open it, walking through to his study. Removing a heavy tome from a shelf and opening it on a table, Arthur compares some numbers listed in it with the contents of Einstein's letter.
Arthur? What is it?
It fits. Einstein's thinking in the real orbit of Mercury is the same. You know what this could mean, Winnie? Einstein's beginning to close in on gravity.
Arthur cycles through Cambridge and is soon making his way into a meeting room of the Astronomical Society.
I need to talk to you.
Professor Oliver?
Not now.
Chlorine gas. Made in Berlin.
What?
The Cambridgeshires. Obliterated at the Battle of Ypres.
All of them.
Major Colin Foster. Captain Raymond Lodge.
Arthur takes the newspaper and sees a photograph of William.
First Lieutenant William Marston.
Arthur digests the news before turning and walking from the room. Arthur's hurrying away with his bicycle outside when his colleague, Dyson, catches up with him.
Eddington, I wanted you to know how sorry I am. William was a good friend, wasn't he?
Yes, he was, yes.
Arthur cycles off without looking back. Albert comes across a military checkpoint outside the university.
What's going on? What's going on?
Give me your pass, please.
This is ridiculous.
He snatches his pass back from the soldier. Soon, he's angrily bursting into the common room.
What are you talking about? Other great men of science discussing the great scientific issues of the day, or is the talk of poison gas and how many dead at Ypres and how many more? If only we could have judged the wind conditions better. Any more tea?
Einstein! This is the common room.
Yes, yes. There must be no noise. Noise is bad. Noise is unforgivable. This university is the heart of German science. Please, no shouting. Thousands of young men killed by chlorine gas from this university. What are we doing? What is this madness?
Max, Fritz, and his other colleagues stare back at Albert as he turns and strides from the room. Arthur sits alone in the small Quaker church. Opening his pocket watch, he looks down at it, trembling with emotion. Now he's standing at the base of the large tree, the spot where William gave him the watch. Winifred approaches as Arthur sits down by the trunk, where he removes his glasses and covers his face with his hands.
I can't tell anyone.
You can tell me.
I loved him.
I know.
I loved him so much.
Yes.
She wraps her arms around him and he holds her tightly.
Find an answer, Winnie.
No.
There's no reason for his death. There's no comfort to be found.
No.
Where was God at Ypres?
A tear runs down Winifred's cheek as she gazes at the pain etched on her brother's face. Then they cling to each other tightly. Dyson speaks at a meeting of the Royal Astronomical Society.
We have a proposal from the President. The proposal is that we expel all Germans from membership of the Royal Astronomical Society and that all contact between any of our membership and any German scientists cease now.
15,000 killed at Ypres in one day. Gassed. Everyone. Who did this? Who killed my son? I'll tell you. German science.
Perhaps we should do this another day.
No, we'll go on.
Sir Oliver.
We go on.
Can I assume that no one wishes to speak against the motion?
Who killed Raymond Lodge? All of us.
That's enough, Eddington.
This stupid and futile war killed him, expelling German scientists. It won't bring anyone at the Cambridgeshires back.
Eddington,
The pursuit of truth in science transcends national boundaries. Takes us beyond hatred and anger and fear. It is the best of us.
What truth? That there are no rules, no standards, no moral absolutes, that you break all the rules of science and replace them with nothing? What does your Einstein want?
He wants what I want. A new theory of gravity.
I think we should move to a vote. All those in favour of the motion?
Sir Oliver leads the show of hands.
Against?
Arthur raises his hand, and Sir Oliver stands, staring at him furiously.
My son is dead. He died fighting this evil. I tell you this now. I will not allow his death to have been in vain.
Mercury.
We've had this before.
What?
The orbit of a planet that Newton couldn't account for, Uranus. And what happened? Neptune was discovered. And where was Neptune? Exactly where Newton predicted it must be. And what did that mean? The orbit of Uranus made sense with Newton after all. When will you learn? Everything happens for a reason!
Arthur stands calmly but defiantly.
Ypres.
How dare you mention that name? What do you know of Ypres? What do you know of grief? I have lost my son. But there is order in the universe.
The two men stare at each other for a moment. Then Sir Oliver turns and walks from the room. A sleepy-looking Alberts lying fully clothed in his bed, many sheets of paper resting on his belly as he makes calculations. Now, looking dishevelled and tired, he arrives at the university checkpoint.
Can I see your pass, please?
He hands his pass over.
Excuse me, sir.
What?
No.
Why?
We've been instructed not to let you enter.
I need to get my post. Get my letters, all right? Please.
Two soldiers push him away.
Max! They won't let me collect my post.
You've been cut off for your anti-German outburst.
But all my letters come through the university.
Yes.
Albert shakes his head.
Max.
But Max appears unmoved by his pleading expression. Finally, Albert turns away and Max watches him walk off down the street. Elsa opens a door and looks upon Albert's exhausted, unkempt appearance with a mixture of anger and revulsion.
You look terrible.
I'm sick, but I just wanted to see you.
Is you are lonely?
Yes.
Why haven't you come before?
I've been working.
He moves closer to her.
I love you.
Charm isn't enough, Albert.
Elsa.
So don't come here telling me I'm beautiful and you love me and expect me to open my arms to you.
Elsa.
I will make up my mind about you. In my own time.
Are you asking me to go?
She slowly steps away from him, and Albert looks at her for a long moment before finally nodding sadly. Tears glisten in Elsa's eyes as he turns and leaves. It's nighttime as Albert's feet stumble across a wet, cobbled road. He turns to see a motor car driving towards him that stands unmoving as it swerves past him, followed by another which splashes water from a puddle onto him as it speeds by. A third car passes Albert, and something seems to dawn on him as it does so. An expression of profound revelation slowly settles on his face, which in turn gives way to a broad smile. He climbs the steps to his apartment. Inside, he sets to work immediately, perched on the edge of his bed, frantically writing a letter on a sheet of paper. The checkpoint outside the university.
Pass, please.
Albert's waiting there for Max.
Would you say that this gets to Cambridge? They won't allow me to post it.
Max walks by.
But you are. They would allow you to. Please. You brought me here to Berlin. Please, Max. What you asked. My work on gravity is finished.
Max turns to face him. Arthur's walking the university grounds, reading a letter when Dyson sees him.
What are you reading?
You look overcome.
Come to supper.
For what we are about to receive, may the Lord make us truly thankful.
Amen.
Amen. Amen.
It's called general relativity. It's a theory of gravity and everything. He's done it.
He clears the table.
Let me just show you.
What are you doing? Have you gone mad?
Dyson, the other end. Pick it up. Pick up the tablecloth. Space. The tablecloth is space. The sun. What's happening?
What?
What's happening with the sun and space?
Well, the bread is sinking into the tablecloth.
The sun makes a shape around it in space.
Yes. Now, what happens if I do this?
He rolls an apple.
It wants to travel in a straight line, but it can't. Why not?
The apple curves around the bread.
Because the bread's making a shape.
The apple follows the curves made in space.
Yes. Yes, space is shaped. And that is how gravity works. Space tells objects how to move. Objects tell space what shape to be. And there's a way to prove it. When starlight comes near to the sun, what will happen to it?
It'll bend.
Yes. That's what he says. That's what Einstein says. Starlight will bend. Every theory needs proof. I'm the man to prove it.
The English observer and the German theorist.
Hand in glove.
We're at war, Eddington. Germany is our enemy.
I love my country very deeply, but my country is my country, and this... this is so much more.
Arthur stares at Dyson.
Will you help me?
You can't point your telescope straight at the sun.
I know, too bright. But May 29th, 1919.
What?
Total solar eclipse. A chance to look at the sun.
Where?
Africa. The island of Principe. It's the best place to view the eclipse.
So all we need is a profoundly large amount of money.
So who do we ask? As we look at the eclipsed sun through the giant telescope, it will be directly in the middle of the Hyades star cluster.
We'll take photographs of these stars during the 5 minutes of eclipse and then compare them to photographs taken of the same stars at night.
One photographic plate on top of another. Are the stars in the same place or different? If they are different, then we will know that starlight is bent by the sun.
Having finished their presentation, Arthur and Dyson stand before Sir Oliver and his colleagues.
This is an English expedition.
Yes.
To prove a German scientist right.
Or wrong.
If Einstein is right, then an English expedition will have proved it. If he isn't, then an English expedition will have proved a German scientist wrong, and Sir Isaac Newton right.
I don't believe you.
I'm sorry?
I don't believe your mind is open.
I was made for this. I'm the best measuring man in England. This is my moment. This is what my whole life in science has been for. I would never, never allow bias or prejudice in. I swear to you, on all that I hold dear, my mind is open. What about yours?
Mine?
Is your mind open?
Of course.
Then may we have our money.
Later, Arthur waits for Dyson in the hall outside.
Principe! He's agreed. We're going to Africa.
The time on Arthur's pocket watch shows that it's 11 o'clock in the morning. He sits staring at the watch in his study. Nearby is a copy of a newspaper with the headline, End of the Great World War. Winifred comes in and sits down opposite him.
It's over. How could God allow so many to die?
Germany's blockaded. No food is getting into Berlin. They have no water, no medicine. Great Britain has won the war, and now she wants her revenge. I'm leaving for Berlin with a friend. I hope we Quakers can help. With you in Africa, we will be a long way apart.
Later, Arthur hurries from the house as Winifred prepares to leave in a motor car.
Winnie! Winnie! Say goodbye to me.
I'm afraid for you.
What are you talking about?
I'm worried you're losing something you used to be sure of. Your faith. You must listen for God. Do you hear me?
Having held his face tightly, Winifred gets into the waiting car and Arthur watches as she's driven away. Principe, West Africa. Rain pours down on the expedition's encampment, high up on a mountain overlooking the sea. Wearing a wide-brimmed hat, Arthur walks to the edge of the camp and stares out at the world around him. He spends a long time looking up at the overcast sky. Now he's sitting at a small desk in a tent, pen in hand, studying a ledger book. Dyson wanders in, his arms folded.
What time is it?
It's noon. 2 hours to go. The rain has stopped.
The cloud?
It's full cloud cover.
Arthur puts the book aside, picks up his hat, and goes over to stand next to Dyson.
Everything's ready. It's all down to whether the cloud lifts, and if God is with us.
Now Arthur's sitting on a pile of rocks a short distance down the side of the mountain. He's staring out at the horizon beyond the green curve of the coastline. Dyson comes to stand behind him.
It's time.
Arthur sits unmoving for a moment, before standing and turning to face his colleague.
We'll get into position. We'll do what we've come here to do.
Both men climb back up to the encampment. In his tent, Arthur winds up his pocket watch and lays it down on the desk. He stares down at it for a long moment.
Eddington, quick! Look!
They both look up at the sky.
5 minutes to go.
Above them, the disk of the sun slowly becomes visible as the thinning clouds drift by. Arthur and Dyson stop squinting skywards and take their positions behind a large telescope mounted horizontally, its lens pointed at a circular mirror that's angled upwards. Suddenly, the light fades over the camp as the solar eclipse begins. Day turns to night almost instantly as the silhouetted moon, reflected in the mirror, creeps across the face of the sun. The sun's completely covered by the moon now, the bright solar corona appearing around the edges.
Totality. We have 5 minutes to take photographs.
Carefully, Arthur slides a photographic plate into a mount at the rear of the telescope and exposes it. The sky's eerily dark, with stars clearly visible around the eclipsed sun. Arthur covers the plate again and removes it before quickly putting in a second one. Having completed the second photograph, he repeats the process with the third. Arthur hands the third plate to Dyson, who carefully packs it away as Arthur takes the fourth and final photograph. A few moments later, the moon, continuing on its orbital path, begins to slide away from the sun again, revealing a bright crescent of light. Arthur hands the last plate to Dyson, then watches as daylight quickly returns.
The rain stopped.
Yes, it did.
And the cloud cleared.
Arthur looks relieved and happy.
Yes, it did.
There are blue skies over the camp. Later, with the sun beginning to set, Arthur walks over to Dyson.
6 of the plates are poor quality. 2 are good. So we have 2 photographs to compare with the original plate back in England.
Will it be Einstein or Newton?
It's time to go home.
From the two men staring out across the sea to Albert, wearily packing a suitcase that's resting on his bed. He arrives on a train platform. He looks drained as he makes his way towards the train. Now, Hans is opening a door to his father. Albert hugs his son, who hugs him back tightly. Now, Albert's lying in bed, while Maleva stands looking at him.
A divorce has taken longer than the war.
Your work has made you ill. I hope what you've been doing is worth all this sacrifice.
We have to do the best that we are capable of. It is our sacred human responsibility. Anything less is unforgivable. I had to do the work. My theory is too beautiful to be wrong. Somebody will prove it.
Why are you here?
He looks past Maleva to Hans, who's standing in the doorway.
I have a promise to keep.
To Hans.
Space is shaped. Space is full of curves. And dense. And wonderful shapes.
Are you leaving again? Are you going back to Berlin?
Albert can only stare at his son, who stands up.
He's not staying.
Hans is comforted by Maleva, who stands with her arm around Edward. Next, Hans is on a balcony, mournfully watching his father walk away down the street, carrying his suitcase. Dyson passes Arthur a photographic negative.
This is it. The comparison plate is in position.
No. We should do this in public. We should share this with anyone who wants to witness it. Right or wrong, this moment is for all of science.
A pillared hall where a well-attended presentation is about to take place. Dyson's pacing nervously at a table in front of the assembled audience, while Arthur's in a corridor outside, checking a photographic plate. Wearing a top hat, Sir Oliver enters the hall with two colleagues and strides up the aisle that separates the two sections of the audience. He takes a seat near the front of the gathering, while all eyes turn to Arthur, who strides up the aisle to join Dyson at the table. Arthur prepares the two plates.
If the stars on this photographic plate of the eclipse overlap with the comparison plate, Einstein is wrong and Newton's theory holds. If there is a gap between the two images, then the sun's gravitational field has shifted the star's position and we have a new theory of gravity.
Arthur slides the two negatives together. He peers through an optical device, straining to align the stars in each of the plates. He makes an adjustment to his lens. It becomes clear that the stars, as they appear in the two photographs, are in slightly different places.
A gap.
Einstein.
Arthur stares out at the audience.
I call upon Arthur Eddington.
He walks to the front of the table and composes himself, preparing to speak.
None of us can know what the world is in the way that we used to know it. Einstein says...
Arthur watches as Sir Oliver and his colleagues walk from the hall.
Einstein says that time is not the same for all of us, but different for each one of us.
He spots Winifred appear at a viewing gallery and they smile at each other.
It's very hard to conceive of such separate views, of such relative ways of seeing. Today is the first day of a new world that is much harder to live in. Less certain. More lonely. But which has at its heart human endeavor. One man has shown us how. Look at what one man can do. In this man's work, in the beautiful complexity of the new universe he has shown us, I, for one, have no doubt. I can hear God thinking.
Winifred joins in the warm standing ovation that follows. Albert climbs the stairwell to his apartment, puzzled by the presence of the men who are loitering there. Max is waiting for him inside.
Professor Einstein!
Who are all those men outside?
Reporters! Word has reached us from London of your anointing. You're famous.
Albert turns to see Elsa's standing behind him.
You're here.
She breathes deeply as she looks at him.
Will you have me?
On one condition. You can't go outside and meet all those people looking like that. They'll think you're a lunatic.
He closes his eyes as she holds his face.
What kind of genius looks like you?
He kisses her fingers, then begins to mess his hair up even more before pulling his shirt from his trousers.
No!
Yes, yes.
No!
Yes.
Having made his appearance completely untidy, Albert goes out and allows the reporters outside to photograph him. Just as he's about to go back into the apartment, he turns suddenly, opens his mouth wide, and sticks his tongue out at them. Cambridge, 1 year later. Arthur puts on his jacket while gazing at the motionless orrery.
Hello. Yes. Hello. Oh, yes. Yes.
Dyson is introducing Albert to members of the Royal Astronomical Society. Well-groomed and smartly dressed, Albert looks up to where Arthur is descending a grand staircase. Arthur's colleagues look on as the two scientists stand before each other at last.
Eddington.
Einstein.
Einstein offers his hand, and Eddington takes it. Dyson leads the applause for the two men, who can only smile at each other. Eddington's proof made Einstein famous and instantly transformed the little-known scientist into one of the most recognized people in the world. Einstein's general theory of relativity and its extraordinary predictions, the Big Bang, black holes in space, and the expanding universe, have astonished and inspired each new generation. Arthur Eddington was less happy in the spotlight and spent the rest of his life trying to unite his scientific knowledge with his religious faith. Today, his work is largely forgotten.